Chapter 1. The last pulse of silver sputtered into dust. Gone. A cold, hollow ache bloomed in Alara's chest, spreading through her veins like frost. She stared at her empty hands, hands that were meant to heal, to mend, to weave life back into the world. But then they had failed. The moon petal blossom, the last one in the entire valley, was now nothing more than a wisp of gray ash on the cracked earth. Without warning, the silence of the dying glade became a roar in her ears. Truth be told, she was getting used to this feeling. It was the taste of the thin broth she ate each night, the sour scent on the wind that should have carried the perfume of pine, the sight of the children's tired, hungry faces. It was the feeling of being a healer in a world that had forgotten how to live. Deep down, she knew the truth. Her gift was fading because the very land it drew from was turning to dust beneath her feet. Maybe it was fate that she remembered it then, a memory so sharp it hurt. A flash of green grass, the warmth of a summer sun, and a tiny sparrow in her 10-year-old hands. Its wing was a broken, twisted thing. But she had held it, whispering promises to the tiny, frantic heartbeat. Her body had moved on instinct, her magic flowing out of her not as a trickle, but as a river of pure silver light. She remembered the feeling of small bones knitting back together, of torn feathers smoothing into place, of life surging back under her touch. The memory was supposed to be a comfort, a reminder of who she was. Instead, it was a ghost that haunted her, whispering of a power she could no longer command. Why was it so easy then and so impossible now? No matter how hard she tried, she couldn't summon that river of light again. It was a cruel, mocking echo. As if pulled by a string, she rose to her feet, the brittle leaves crunching like old bones under her boots. She had to do something. She had to find an answer. She had to believe a cure existed, somewhere hidden in the deep woods. Because of that, she forced her shoulders back, ignoring the ache in her soul. She would not let her pack starve. She would not let their world fade to gray. She would not fail. As the silence stretched, a prickle of awareness traced a path up her spine. The unnerving sensation of being watched. Her breath caught. Slowly, she turned. Across the clearing, a figure detached itself from the deep shadows of the elders' huts. It was Maeve, the oldest of the council, a woman who looked as ancient and weathered as the mountains themselves. But then, Alara realized Maeve wasn't looking at the dead blossom, or the skeletal trees, or the sickly gray-brown grass. Instead, her dark, knowing eyes were fixed on Alara. In that moment, the air thickened. It wasn't a look of pity or concern. It was a gaze of profound, chilling assessment. Maeve's eyes held the weight of centuries, and in their depths, Alara saw a flicker of something that terrified her. Recognition. As if she wasn't seeing Alara the healer, but a specific key for a specific lock. With every heartbeat, the weight of that stare grew heavier, a physical pressure that promised a fate far worse than starvation. The elder gave a single slow nod, a confirmation, a sentence. And just like that, everything changed. Maeve turned and melted back into the gloom, leaving Alara alone with a fear so cold and so deep it eclipsed everything else. The blight was no longer her greatest enemy. Chapter 2. The dread from Maeve's stare was a poison that seeped into her sleep, turning her dreams to shadow and ash. Come morning, it was a bitter taste in her mouth. She had to know. She had to understand, which meant she had to face the elders, no matter how much her instincts screamed at her to run and hide. She found them near the council hut, their hushed, urgent voices cutting off the second she came into view. The space between them burned with unspoken words. Elders, Alara said, her voice steadier than she felt. I need to know what's happening. Kian, an elder with kind, sorrowful eyes, looked away, his gaze fixed on the jagged peaks of the mountains that clawed at the sky. There are things, old things, that are best left undisturbed, child. The time for leaving things undisturbed is over, she shot back, a spark of anger cutting through her fear. Her voice trembled. Our people are dying. The land is dying. And yesterday, Elder Maeve looked at me as if I was the answer to a question I don't even know how to ask. What is going on? Maeve stepped forward, her presence silencing any who might have dared to speak. Your fire is admirable, Alara, but it is misplaced. Then place it for me, she challenged. A beat later, Kian spoke, his voice a low rumble of foreboding. She deserves to know something, Maeve, before the summons. He turned his sad eyes to Alara. Have you ever heard the tales of the first king of Umbracrag? The great wolf of shadow and ice? Alara shook her head, her heart beginning to pound a frantic rhythm against her ribs. He was no king, Kian murmured, a tremor in his voice. He was a force of nature, a walking winter, our ancestors. They angered him, and he cursed them with a portion of the blight we see now. To save themselves from total annihilation, our first Alpha made a pact, a debt of blood to be paid only in the direst of times. Before he could say more, Maeve's voice sliced through the air, sharp as obsidian. Enough, Kian. You speak of things that will only cause fear. She has a right to be afraid, he retorted. She has a duty to be strong, Maeve countered, her gaze locking once more onto Alara. It was a command, a dismissal, and a warning. That night, the summons came. The air in the council hut was thick and suffocating, tasting of smoke and secrets. The five elders were a tribunal of grim, shadowed faces in the flickering firelight. Alara stood before them, her hands clenched, her pulse racing. Alara, Maeve began, her voice echoing in the stillness. Tomorrow, at sundown, you will turn 25 years of age. The statement hung there, a simple fact that felt like the fall of a headsman's axe. Ages ago, Maeve continued, her voice dropping, our pack was saved by a treaty, a terrible, desperate bargain. That treaty states that when our line faces extinction, a daughter of the healer's blood, your blood, must be offered to the reigning Alpha King on her 25th birthday. Offered. The word was a physical blow, a violation. She was not a person, not a healer, not one of them. She was a thing to be traded, a piece of meat to be thrown to a monster to save the rest of the herd. Her breath caught. Offered, why? What for? To save us, Maeve whispered, and for the first time, raw desperation cracked her iron composure. He is our only hope, Alara. He has the power, the resources, the magic to hold back the blight. And him? Alara choked out, her thoughts spinning into chaos. What could a king possibly want with me? The silence roared. Maeve looked at the fire, her profile etched in flickering orange and deep shadow. Because, she said, her voice barely audible, the Alpha King has his own curse. His own blight is consuming him, body and soul, and for reasons known only to fate, your blood is the only key that can save him. Chapter 3. A Key. The word echoed in the sudden, roaring silence of the council hut. She wasn't a person. She wasn't Alara. She was a key. A thing made of blood and bone, forged by her ancestors to be used, to be turned in a lock, and then... what? Discarded? The thought sent a tremor of pure, hot fury through her numb shock, her hands clenched into fists at her sides. No, she whispered, the word a raw tear in the heavy air. Maeve's eyes narrowed. No? Child, you do not understand what you are saying. This is not a request you can deny. I understand perfectly. Her voice rose, stronger now, fueled by the sheer injustice of it all. You want to trade my life for yours. You want to sell me to some cursed king I've never met to solve a problem you let fester for generations. You talk of debts, but what about the debt you owe to me, to protect your own people? The air crackled with tension. Elder Kian stepped forward, his face etched with a deep, genuine sorrow. She is right, Maeve. We are asking the impossible. He turned to Alara, his voice a low, pleading rumble. Please, Alara, try to understand. This isn't a choice we made lightly. We are desperate. Look around you. Listen to the silence in the woods. There are no birds. The river is choked with dust. In a month, the children will not just be hungry. They will be dying. I have seen it. His words were a physical blow, knocking the wind from her lungs and the fire from her veins. The children. To make things worse, he continued, his voice cracking. I held little Finn this morning. His cough is getting worse. His mother. She looks at me with such hope, but I have none to give her. We all look to you. Finn. A small boy with big brown eyes and a laugh that used to sound like tiny bells. Now, it was a wet, rasping sound. Her chest ached. She could picture his face so pale and thin. She could feel the feverish heat of his skin under her palm. Deep down, she knew the truth. Her anger was a shield, a useless defense against the healer's heart that beat inside her. How could she live with herself in a world she saved by running, knowing she had condemned him to die? She couldn't. It was that simple. Because of that, the fight drained out of her, leaving a vast, cold emptiness. She would not be a daughter. She would not be a healer. She would not be free. She would be a sacrifice. The silence roared, stretching for an eternity. She closed her eyes. The image of Finn's trusting face burned into the darkness behind them. Maybe it was fate, a destiny written in her blood 1,000 years ago. Who was she to fight it? Her choice was never a choice at all. It was an inevitability. Her world tilted. Her thoughts spun. In the span of a breath, she let her old life die. When she opened her eyes, the fury was gone. In its place was a resolve as cold and hard as river stone. She looked directly at Maeve, her gaze unwavering. I will do it. The words were quiet, but they were heavier than any shout. Relief washed over the elders' faces, so potent it was sickening. Maeve nodded, her expression grim, all traces of desperation gone, replaced by the stoic mask of command. Then prepare yourself. The king's envoy arrives at dawn. Chapter 4. Dawn was not a promise. It was a threat. It came not as a gentle wash of gold and rose, but as a thin gray wound in the bruised purple sky. Alara hadn't slept. Instead, she had sat on the floor of her hut, bundling a few precious herbs into a small leather pouch. A sprig of dried wolfsbane, a twist of feverfew, the last of her sunroot. Useless against the blight, she knew. But they were a tangible link to who she was. Or who she used to be. A healer. When she stepped outside, the village was awake but silent. The air was cold. Still. Her packmates watched from the doorways of their huts, their faces a haunting mixture of pity, shame, and a desperate, gut-wrenching relief. No one spoke. No one met her eyes. In that moment, she had never felt so utterly alone. She was a ghost walking through her own life, already forgotten. And then, she scented it. A new smell on the wind, cutting through the familiar dust of the glade. It was sharp and cold, like mountain stone and winter frost. And something else beneath it. Something wild and metallic, like old blood and lightning. As if summoned, two figures crested the ridge. They were wolves. Massive. Larger than any she had ever seen, their pelts the color of storm clouds and midnight. They moved with a predatory grace that made the hairs on her arms stand on end, their paws silent on the dead earth. Between one breath and the next, they shifted. The transition was not a gruesome crack of bones and tearing of flesh, but a fluid, breathtaking unraveling of one form into another. The air shimmered around them as shadow and substance twisted together. One moment they were beasts of terrifying power, the next they were two warriors, tall and severe, clad in black leather and dark, scarred steel. They were the king's shadow made flesh. They moved through her village as if it didn't exist, their hard, emotionless eyes fixed only on her. The lead warrior, a man with a cruel scar that cut through one eyebrow, stopped before the elders. He did not greet them. He did not acknowledge them at all. His gaze, a piercing inhuman gold, landed on Alara. It was a look of ownership. "We are here for the offering." His voice was a low growl, a rumble that vibrated in her bones. There was no room for negotiation, no space for pleasantries. Maeve simply nodded, gesturing a withered hand towards Alara. "She is ready." Ready. The word was a lie. How could anyone be ready for this? Without another word, the scarred warrior turned and began walking back the way he came. The other warrior fell into step behind her, a cage of two. There were no goodbyes, no last words of comfort from her pack. They just watched her go, their silence her only farewell. Her body moved on instinct, her legs carrying her forward, away from the only home she had ever known. With every step he took, the cold scent of the mountains grew stronger, a promise of the desolate kingdom that awaited. Eventually, they reached the ridge. She risked one last look back. The sunken glade lay below, a sad gray bowl of decay and memory. Her chest ached with a grief so profound it stole her breath. Then she turned away. Before her, the world was a canvas of sharp black rock and angry bruised clouds. The mountains of Umbercrag waited, their jagged teeth chewing on the sky. She was walking into the heart of winter, and she knew, with a certainty that froze her soul, that she would never feel the sun again. Chapter 5. The cold was no longer just in the air. It was in her bones, a deep, gnawing chill that had nothing to do with the wind that howled through the mountain pass. It was the cold of absolute despair. With every step she took, the world of her memory, the soft earth of the glade, the gentle green of the leaves, the warmth of the sun, faded a little more, replaced by this new, brutal reality. This was Umbercrag, the kingdom of the Alpha King. And it was a nightmare. The land was not dying like her home. It was dead, murdered. Petrified trees clawed at the perpetually overcast sky like the hands of the drowned. The very rocks under her feet seemed sharp and hostile, slick with a strange, dark moss that pulsed with a faint, sickly purple light. The silence was the worst part. There were no birds, no insects, no rustle of small animals in the undergrowth. There was only the moan of the wind and the rhythmic, relentless crunch of her guard's boots on the gravel path. As the sky darkened, they arrived. The castle was not built upon the mountain. It was the mountain, a colossal fortress of jagged black stone that seemed to have been torn from the peak by some giant angry god. There were no banners, no windows of welcoming light, only narrow slits that looked like the suspicious eyes of a predator. The great gates, made of a dark pitted metal she didn't recognize, groaned open like the lid of a sarcophagus. The sound echoed in the vast empty courtyard. Her two guards led her inside, their footsteps booming in the cavernous space. The interior was even more grim. Immense halls stretched into shadow, the stone walls bare except for ancient, faded tapestries depicting scenes of savage battles and great wolves hunting under a broken moon. Torches sputtered in iron sconces, their flames casting long, dancing shadows that seemed to writhe and twist with a life of their own. Deep down, she knew the truth. This wasn't a castle. It was a tomb. And she could feel it. The sickness. It was a low, vibrating hum beneath the stone floors, a thrumming agony that resonated with her own gift. The pain of this place was so old and so profound, it made the blight in her own land feel like a simple scratch. Her world tilted. She didn't know what scared her more. The cold, silent guards, the monstrous castle, or the screaming pain of the land itself. Finally, they stopped before a set of massive iron-banded doors. The scarred warrior turned to her, his golden eyes cold and empty. "The king will see you now." Without another word, he pushed the doors open and nudged her inside. The doors boomed shut behind her, the sound a final definitive clang of a cage being locked. She was alone, in the heart of the mountain, in the den of the beast. The room was a vast circular chamber, dominated by a massive, empty throne carved from a single piece of obsidian. And then, she scented him. The scent was overwhelming, a storm of pine, winter frost, and something ancient and predatory that made the tiny, dormant wolf inside her stir for the first time in years. Chapter 6. The scent was a physical presence in the room, a promise of power and a warning of danger. It wrapped around her, heavy and absolute. Before she could move, a shadow detached itself from the deeper gloom near the throne. He was not what she had expected. He was worse. King Vorlag was no fairy tale king in silks and jewels. He was a warrior, built with the savage grace of the wolves who had brought her here. Tall and broad-shouldered, he was dressed in simple black leathers that did nothing to hide the raw power rippling beneath. His dark hair was long, threaded with a few strands of startling silver at the temples, and his face was a harsh, handsome mask of sharp angles and old scars. But his eyes were the most terrifying part. They were the same piercing, intelligent gold as his guards, but his were shadowed with a deep, weary pain and a dangerous, burning impatience. He moved toward her, his steps silent. He circled her once, like a wolf assessing its prey. His stare was so intense it felt like a physical touch, weighing her, measuring her, stripping her down to her very soul. So, his voice was a low, gravelly rumble that seemed to come from the depths of the mountain itself. You are the healer, the key. He didn't ask her name. He didn't ask about her journey. She was an object, a tool. The fury she'd felt in the council hut flickered back to life, a tiny spark in the cold sea of her fear. My name is Alara, she said, her voice trembling but clear. He gave a slight, dismissive wave of his hand. Your name is irrelevant. Your blood is what matters. He stopped in front of her, the sheer force of his presence a wall she could feel against her skin. My kingdom is turning to stone. My wolf, the spirit inside me, is dying. The treaty says your bloodline can halt the decay, that it can save me. His eyes narrowed, a flash of something desperate and raw breaking through his cold control. I am out of time, girl. So you will tell me. Is the treaty true? Her heart hammered against her ribs. She could feel the agony rolling off of him, the pain of his land, the pain of his wolf. It resonated with her own gift, a symphony of suffering. I don't know, she answered honestly. I am a healer. But the blight, it doesn't respond to my healing. A growl rose in his throat, a low, rumbling sound of pure frustration. Growl. Then you are useless. He turned away, running a hand through his hair. Without thinking, the words left her lips. It's not just you. This place, the very stones are in pain. He froze. Slowly, he turned back, a dangerous, questioning light in his golden eyes. What did you say? I can feel it, she whispered. The castle, the mountain, it's all sick. It's a deeper wound than in my home. For the first time, his expression shifted. The impatience was still there, but it was joined by a flicker of something else, something she couldn't name. He stalked over to a large, ornate stone planter near the throne. Inside was what looked like a dead branch, a petrified, twisted thing of gray wood. This was the heart sapling of my ancestors, he snarled, his voice laced with bitter grief. It has been dead for a century. He gestured to it with a sharp, commanding nod. You feel the pain? Then heal it. It was a test, a cruel, impossible command. But as she looked at the dead branch, she felt a faint, thready pulse deep within it, a tiny spark of life buried under a mountain of decay. As if pulled by a string, she stepped forward. Her hand trembled as she reached out and laid her palm against the cold, stone-like bark. She closed her eyes, shutting out the intimidating king, the cold room, her own fear. She focused on that tiny pulse, that flicker of life. She didn't try to summon the river of light from her memory. Instead, she offered what little she had left, A single gentle drop of warmth, a whisper of hope. And as the silence roared, a miracle happened. From the dead gray wood, a single, tiny, impossibly vibrant green leaf unfurled. Time stood still. She felt it before she saw it, a gasp of shock from the Alpha King. She opened her eyes. Forlog was staring at the leaf, his harsh face a mask of stunned, utter disbelief. The silence stretched, and in it, for the very first time, the king looked at her not as a key but as a flame in the darkness. Chapter 7. The king's silence was more terrifying than his rage. It stretched, thick and heavy, filling the vast throne room. Forlog stared at the tiny green leaf, his harsh face a mask of stunned disbelief. With every heartbeat, Alara felt his shock, his hope, and his crushing desperation warring within him. He reached out a hand, his fingers, scarred and calloused from a warrior's life, hovering over the leaf for a moment before he touched its vibrant surface with a reverence that seemed alien to him. "Do it again," he commanded, his voice a low, rough growl. He turned his burning golden eyes on her, the flicker of awe already being consumed by a new, sharper impatience. "If you can bring life to dead wood, you can heal this kingdom. You can heal me." Her heart skipped. He was looking at her like she was a miracle, but also like she was a weapon he was just learning how to wield. I don't know if I can," she stammered. "It's not something I command. I just felt a little spark of life and..." "Then feel it again," he snarled, taking a step closer. The air crackled with his power. "Feel the spark in me. My wolf is fading, healer. Do you understand? It's a fire being smothered by ash. Use your gift. Save me." As if pulled by a string, she felt a wave of empathy for him, this terrifying king who was just as desperate as her own people. She wanted to help. She lifted a trembling hand, reaching for the ambient magic of the room, for the pain that thrummed in the stones, trying to draw it, to soothe it. But there was nothing. The single leaf had taken more out of her than she realized. It had been a tiny drop of magic in a dead ocean, and now she was empty. "I can't," she whispered, her voice filled with a genuine sorrow. "There's nothing left right now. I'm sorry." "Sorry?" The word was a whip crack, a low sound ripped from his throat, pain, pure and raw. "Growl." He staggered back a step, his hand flying to his chest as a violent tremor racked his powerful frame. His knuckles went white. His golden eyes flashed with a feral, untamed light that was not entirely his own. It was the frantic, panicked light of a caged animal. His wolf. Before she could move, he straightened up, his face a mask of iron control once more, but his breathing was ragged. The moment of vulnerability was gone, replaced by a cold, hard finality. He had seen a glimmer of hope, and he would not let it go. "Then the old ways will have to be enough," he stated, his voice flat and absolute. "The treaty speaks of a bonding ritual, a ceremony to merge our life forces. It will give my wolf access to your healing, to your bloodline." Her breath caught. A bonding ritual? A forced merging? She didn't know what scared her more. The thought of being magically bound to this terrifying, unstable man, or the chilling certainty that he was wrong. Her healer's instincts were screaming. "We will do it tonight," he commanded, leaving no room for argument. That was the moment her fear finally gave way to a defiant strength. This was her life. Her spirit. It was not his to take and consume. "No," she said, the word quiet. But it landed in the vast hall with the force of a physical blow. The silence that followed was a living, breathing thing. Chapter 8. The word no hung in the air between them, a thing of shocking, defiant power. Vorlag's golden eyes narrowed into dangerous slits. The temperature in the room seemed to drop 10 degrees. Shadows danced between them, coiling as his rage gathered. "What did you say?" he growled, each word a stone dropping into a deep, dark well. I said no, Alara repeated, her voice gaining strength, even as her pulse raced. You can't just force a ritual like that. It's not a simple transaction, it's not a potion to be drunk, it's life magic, and my instincts are telling me something is wrong. There's a piece of this puzzle we are missing. The only thing I am missing is time, he roared, the sound echoing off the stone walls. My spirit is tearing itself apart, this castle is crumbling around me, and you stand there talking of puzzles? And what if a forced bond makes it worse? She shot back, stepping forward, her own desperation making her brave. What if it shatters us both? The ritual will fail because it's founded on ignorance. You don't even know why my bloodline is the key. You just know that it is. Her words hit their mark. A flicker of uncertainty crossed his harsh features. In fact, it was the one question he had no answer for. Then enlighten me, healer, he sneered, though the sound held less conviction than before. I can't, but the answer has to be here somewhere, she insisted. Show me the treaty. Show me the old texts, the histories, anything that mentions the first king and my ancestors. Let me find the truth. For a long moment, he just stared at her, his jaw tight. The logical part of him, the king who had held his dying land together for so long through sheer force of will, was at war with the desperate beast inside him. Eventually, with a frustrated sigh that sounded like grinding stone, he gave a sharp, jerky nod. Fine, he bit out. You want answers? Then you shall have them. He led her from the throne room, down a winding, torch-lit staircase that spiraled deep into the mountain's heart. The air grew colder, thick with the smell of dust and forgotten time. He stopped before an ancient iron door, sealed with a lock of rusted, twisted metal. With a low growl, he ripped the entire mechanism from the stone and pushed the heavy door inward. They had entered a tomb of knowledge, the first king's archives. It was a circular chamber, lined with crumbling scrolls and heavy stone tablets covered in ancient, angular runes. As if drawn by a string, Alara went to a large stone lectern in the center of the room. On it lay a single massive tablet, carved with two columns of script. On the left, the runes were sharp, aggressive, filled with words of shadow, ice, and decay. On the right, the runes were the softer, flowing script of her own people, filled with words of silence, fading, and dust. What is this? Vorlag asked, his voice a low rumble beside her. Her fingers traced the line down the center, and her blood ran cold. It's the same text, she whispered, written in two languages. It's the story of the curse. Together, they read. His was a curse of creeping shadow. Hers was a curse of fading light. His was a plague of aggressive decay. Hers was a plague of silent emptiness. It described one single magical event, one cataclysmic attack, the sundering scourge. It hadn't cursed their two peoples separately. It had cursed the world and ripped their two peoples and their two lands apart like a piece of parchment. The stakes were not his kingdom, not her pack. It was everything. In the stillness that followed, the truth crashed down on them with the weight of 1,000 years. The bond wasn't a cure for him. It was the only way to magically rejoin the two sundered halves of their world. He turned to look at her, the rage and impatience. Chapter 9. Healing Everything. The words hung in the dusty air of the archives, impossibly heavy, impossibly true. For a long moment, neither of them moved. They were just two souls, adrift in the sudden, terrifying vastness of their new reality. Vorlag, the mighty Alpha King, looked utterly thrown, his entire life's purpose, saving himself, saving his kingdom, revealed as a mere fraction of the truth. Alara felt her own world, which had already been shattered, reform into something new and terrifyingly vast. Who? She whispered, the question a puff of breath in the cold air. Who could do something like this? Why would they? Forlog finally looked away from the stone tablet, his golden eyes finding hers. The raw power was still there, but it was now laced with a profound uncertainty. For the first time, he wasn't looking at her as a tool or a key, but as the only other person in the world who could possibly understand the weight that had just settled on his shoulders. I do not know, he admitted, and the honesty in his voice was more shocking than any roar. The archives of the First King are incomplete. Much was lost to time and decay. He took a step closer, the space between them charged with a new volatile energy. But you felt it, didn't you? In the throne room. You said the wound here was deeper than in your home. You knew. It wasn't an accusation. It was a question. A real one. And in that moment, the dynamic between them cracked and shifted. He was no longer her captor. He was a man seeking an answer from someone he now recognized as an equal. Something inside her shifted. This was her purpose. Not to be a sacrifice, but to be a mender of a broken world. This was the true meaning of being a healer. A quiet strength, born from that certainty, flowed through her. Yes, she said, her voice clear and steady. I feel it all. The fading in my land, the decay in yours. It's the same emptiness, the same severing from the source of life. As if pulled by a string, she reached out, her fingers hovering just above the back of his hand where it rested on the stone lectern. And your wolf. His pain is at the very heart of it all. His breath hitched, the muscle in his jaw clenched. He was so powerful, so intimidating. Yet in that instant, she saw the profound vulnerability he kept hidden beneath layers of iron and ice. He was afraid, not of dying, but of being extinguished, of his spirit, his other half, fading into nothing. We have to try, she said, the words a vow spoken into the ancient silence. We have to mend what was broken. The moment her words left her lips, he closed the small distance between their hands. His skin was warm, a startling, living heat against the cold of the archives. It wasn't a romantic touch, not yet. It was a grounding, a connection between the two lonely pillars holding up a crumbling world. As fire bloomed beneath her skin, she realized the bond the treaty spoke of was not something to be forced in a ritual. It was something to be forged, in trust, in shared purpose, in moments exactly like this. He looked from their joined hands back to her face, his gaze intense. The treaty spoke of a bond, he said, his voice a low rumble. But the First King's script, it does not speak of force. It speaks of union. And in the echo of his voice, she understood. Their path forward wasn't a ritual of dominance, but a willing, terrifying experiment. Chapter 10. A Willing Experiment. The idea was even more terrifying than a forced ritual. They returned to the throne room, the silence between them no longer hostile, but thick with a heavy shared purpose. The single, vibrant green leaf on the heart sapling stood as a lonely testament to what was possible, and a stark reminder of the dead kingdom that surrounded it. If we are two halves of a whole, Alara began, her mind racing, trying to piece together the instincts of a healer with the terrible ancient magic they had uncovered, then our powers must be able to touch, to interact. Forlog watched her, his expression grim. When you touched the sapling, you gave it life. When I touch it, nothing happens. The decay is in me, in my blood. My magic is a shadow. Then let me feel it, she said, her own bravery surprising her. Let me touch the shadow. She saw the conflict in his eyes. The king in him recoiled at the thought of revealing such weakness. The desperate man inside him saw no other choice. Eventually, he gave a curt, sharp nod. They stood before the sapling. It was a fragile altar for their desperate prayer. Place your hand on the wood, he commanded, his voice rough. She did, her palm flat against the cold, stone-like bark. A moment later, his hand, large and warm, covered hers. The moment their skin touched with this new, shared intent. Boom. The connection was not a spark. It was a lightning strike. A raw, explosive confluence of power that ripped the breath from her lungs. Her world tilted. She was slammed with a vision, a feeling, 1,000 years of his unyielding will, of his grim determination holding back an endless tide of shadow. She felt the fierce, protective love he had for his dying kingdom, and the deep, soul-crushing agony of his fading wolf. It was a storm of rage and pain and loneliness. And through the bond, he felt her. She knew it by the sharp, stunned gasp that left his lips. He felt the quiet, sunlit warmth of the glade as it once was. He felt her deep, instinctual connection to the earth, the way she could feel the thrum of life in a single blade of grass. He felt her gentleness, not as a weakness, but as a vast, resilient strength. It was too much, too fast, too intimate. And it was a beacon. As fire bloomed beneath her skin, the very stones of the castle groaned in protest. A violent tremor shook the floor, and a wave of malevolent cold exploded from the corners of the room. The shadows writhed, deepening from gray to an unnatural, hungry black. The sundering scourge, it was not just a passive curse. It was a conscious, hateful thing, and it was aware of them. It pushed back. A brutal, invisible force slammed into their joined hands, a wave of pure spite and negation. It sought to sever their connection, to poison her light, to accelerate his decay. The space between them burned with a black, icy fire. The backlash threw them apart. Alara was flung backward, landing hard on the stone floor, her head spinning. Forlag was driven to one knee, a roar of pure agony ripping from his throat as the blight within him flared in response to the attack. Her thoughts spun. With a dawning horror, she looked at the heart sapling. The single, perfect green leaf, their one symbol of hope, flickered. It curled in on itself, and as she watched, it withered, blackened, and crumbled into dust. In the quiet that followed, the failure was a suffocating blanket. They were both breathing heavily, weakened and stunned. The path forward was not so simple. They had touched the face of their true enemy. Vorag looked from the dead dust on the branch to her, his face pale, his golden eyes filled with a new grim understanding. "It's aware of us now," he rasped, his voice a ghost of its former power. "It knows what we are trying to do." Chapter 11. The dust of their dead hope settled on the stone floor, a fine gray powder that coated everything in failure. For a long moment, Alara and Vorlag could only stare at the spot where the green leaf had been, the silence in the throne room a suffocating weight. The connection between them was gone, violently severed. In its place was a raw, painful void. And the scourge was just getting started. Without warning, a deep groaning sound echoed from the very bones of the mountain. It was a sound of immense pressure, of ancient stone complaining under a new and terrible strain. The torches lining the walls flickered wildly, their flames turning a sickly, unnatural blue, casting writhing, elongated shadows that seemed to reach for them. The cold in the room intensified, no longer a passive chill, but an aggressive, biting frost that sank its teeth into their skin. "What's happening?" Alara gasped, scrambling to her feet. Vorlag was already moving, his golden eyes wide with a familiar, desperate light. He stalked to a high, narrow window and looked out. A curse ripped from his lips, low and vicious. "It's accelerating." As if pulled by a string, Alara joined him. What she saw stole the air from her lungs. Below, in the perpetually twilight kingdom, the strange, glowing fungi that dotted the landscape were pulsing, brighter now. A toxic, violet light pulsed in a malevolent rhythm, like a diseased heart. And the shadows. The shadows were spreading, visibly creeping up the mountainsides, swallowing the gray rock, leaving behind a slick, absolute blackness. The attack hadn't just been on them. It had been on the entire kingdom. Their brief union had acted like a challenge, and the scourge had answered with overwhelming force. A pained grunt from beside her made her turn. Vorlag was leaning against the stone wall, his face pale, his powerful body trembling. A thin sheen of sweat beaded on his brow. "Vorlag," she whispered, taking a step toward him. "Don't," he snarled, the word a mess of pain. His eyes, they weren't right. The intelligent gold was being consumed by a feral, feverish light. The backlash. It broke the last of my control. The wolf. He's pushing. As the words left his lips, a tremor racked him, so violent it was terrifying. His hands clenched into claws, his nails thickening and darkening. A low, guttural sound, not quite human, tore from his throat. Grrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr The king versus the beast, the man versus the blight. Driven by an instinct she couldn't deny, she reached for him. Let me help! No, he roared, and the force of it was a physical blow. He shoved himself away from the wall, away from her, his movements jerky and uncontrolled. She felt it then, a barrier between them. She tried to reach for him with her gift, to soothe the raging storm inside him, but there was nothing to grasp. Her magic simply dissipated against the wall of raw, chaotic energy radiating from him. She couldn't heal him because the scourge was now actively poisoning the very connection that could save them. To make things worse, every beat of her heart seemed to echo the diseased pulse of the light outside. Her own gentle power felt like a child's toy, a whisper in a hurricane of hate. She was utterly, hopelessly useless. The moment their eyes locked, she saw a flash of the man, the king, drowning in a sea of feral instinct. And in that flash, she saw terror. Not for himself, but for her. The tension broke. He was losing, and they both knew it. Chapter 12. He was a monster. A mess of shadow and snarling teeth, the face of the man she was beginning to know lost in a mask of feral agony. Foreleg stumbled back, his powerful form half-crouched, one hand braced against the throne as if it were the only thing keeping him anchored to the world. His breath came in ragged, painful gasps. The growl in his chest was a constant, terrifying rumble. Foreleg, please, Ilara whispered, her hands held out in a useless gesture of peace. Fight it. Don't let it win. With a monumental effort of will, he forced himself upright. The feral light in his eyes receded, just slightly, replaced by a storm of self-loathing and horror. He looked at his own hand, at the claws that had started to form, and then he looked at her. And what she saw in his face broke her heart. It was shame, and a terrible, protective finality. Get away from me, he snarled, his voice a raw rasp. I won't leave you, she insisted, taking another hesitant step forward. I said get away, he roared. And this time, he swiped an arm through the air, shattering a nearby stone pedestal. The sound of it crashing to the floor echoed the shattering of the fragile trust they had built. You can't save me, don't you see? All you did was make it angry. You came to my kingdom and you have doomed us both. Now leave. Every word was a shard of ice. Meant to wound, meant to drive her away. Deep down, she knew the truth. He wasn't pushing her away out of anger. He was pushing her away out of fear. The fear that he would hurt her, that the beast would. But the words still cut, deep and true, because they echoed the terrible failure she felt in her own soul. He was not a king. He was a cage for a dying beast. She was not a healer. She was a catalyst for disaster. They were not a union, they were a catastrophe. Her breath caught on a sob. Without another word, she turned and fled. She didn't stop until she reached the cold, barren guest chambers she'd been given. She slammed the heavy wooden door shut, the sound a final boom of defeat. The silence that followed was absolute. She slid down the door, wrapping her arms around her knees, as a single hot tear traced a path through the grime on her cheek. It was over. She had sacrificed everything. Her home, her freedom, her dream of a quiet life. For what? To fail? To make everything 100 times worse? Her gaze fell on the small leather pouch of herbs at her belt, a pathetic, useless collection of dried leaves and roots. She had brought them to remember who she was. A healer. What a joke. Her internal flaw, the belief she had fought against for so long, rose up and consumed her. Her gentle nature wasn't strength. It was a fatal weakness. It was a candle in a hurricane. She could not do this. She had never been the answer. She was just another victim, another soul to be consumed by the encroaching darkness. In the quiet that followed, she felt the castle settle into a grim, waiting stillness. A tomb for two lonely souls who had lost their war. Vorlag, alone in his throne room, fighting a battle he was doomed to lose. And her, alone in the dark, with nothing left to fight with. There is no hope. There is only the shadow. And it has already won. Chapter 13. Hours bled into a gray, timeless nothing. Ilara didn't move from the floor, a statue of grief in a castle of tombs. The cold of the stone had seeped deep into her limbs, a perfect match for the desolate winter in her soul. Every hope she had ever dared to entertain had been systematically hunted down and slaughtered. The failure was absolute. The shadow had won. She ran a hand over the rough-hewn stone of the wall beside her, the texture a grounding, painful reality. Her people were going to die. Vorlag was going to be consumed, and she, the great healer, the prophesied key, would simply fade to nothing in this cold, dark room. It was a pathetic end to a pathetic story. But then, something happened. Beneath her palm, the stone pulsed, a faint, soft warmth, like the last ember in a dying fire. She snatched her hand back, her heart skipping a beat. Her thoughts spun. She must be imagining it, a trick of her exhausted mind. Still, after a long, silent moment, she hesitantly placed her hand back on the stone. There it was again, a gentle, rhythmic pulse. Thump, thump, warm, alive. And with the warmth came a feeling. Not words, not a voice, but a pure, undiluted wave of emotion that flowed directly into her mind. It was a feeling of profound, ancient sorrow, of a duty performed at a terrible cost. It was the feeling of a healer, just like her. As if the world narrowed, she realized she wasn't alone. As though fate whispered across the centuries, a presence reached for her, an echo left behind in the very bones of the mountain. Then came the images, a vision blooming in the darkness of her mind. She saw two streams of magic. One was a torrent of chaotic, hungry shadow, Vorlag's power, the blight of decay. The other was a quiet, gentle river of silver light, her own power, the fading light of her people. In her previous attempts, she had tried to push her light against his shadow, trying to fight it, to overwhelm it. She watched in the vision as her light was swallowed, again and again, a candle in a hurricane. But then, the vision shifted. The two streams didn't fight. Instead, they began to move alongside each other. And from the silver stream of light, tiny, shimmering threads began to emerge. These threads didn't attack the shadow. They reached into it. They found the wild, chaotic strands and began to weave, to bind, to braid the darkness and the light together. The shadow wasn't an enemy to be destroyed. It was a necessary component, the dark thread needed to create the tapestry. And she understood. Her gentleness wasn't weakness. It was the precision and dexterity needed to perform this impossible, intricate task. And Vorlag's indomitable will, the strength he used to cage his wolf, that wasn't meant to be a cage, it was the anchor. The unshakable frame needed to hold the chaotic threads of shadow steady enough for her to weave. They had been using their powers all wrong. Hope, so fierce and bright it was painful, exploded in her chest. It surged through her, a fire against the cold despair. Hope returned because she finally understood. Her gift wasn't a weapon. It was a loom. And just like that, everything changed. She scrambled to her feet, her eyes blazing with a new wild fire. The tears on her face were forgotten. The cold in her bones was burned away. She knew what she had to do. She knew how to save them. She had to get back to the king. Chapter 14. Hope was a fragile flame, and to reach the king, she had to carry it through a hurricane of his despair. She found him in the throne room, but he wasn't the raging beast she had fled from. He was just a man. He sat on the steps of his obsidian throne, his broad shoulders slumped in defeat, his head in his hands. The air around him was heavy with a silence more profound than any roar. He looked broken. "Forlag," she said, her voice soft but clear, echoing in the vast chamber. He looked up and his golden eyes were dull, the fire within them banked to a low, pained ember. "Elara, I told you to leave," he rasped, his voice rough with exhaustion. "It's over. I can feel him. The wolf. He's almost gone. There's nothing left to fight." "You're wrong," she said, walking towards him, her step sure and certain. "You've been fighting the wrong battle. We both have." He just shook his head, a bitter, humorless smile twisting his lips. "There is no other battle. There is only the shadow, and it is winning." "No," she insisted, her voice ringing with a newfound power that made him look up again, a flicker of surprise in his eyes. "We don't fight the shadow, Vorlag. We heal it. We don't push our magic against each other. We weave it together." She knelt before him, taking his large, calloused hands in hers. They were cold. She poured all of her new conviction, all of the truth from the vision, into her touch and her words. She told him everything about the loom and the threads of light and dark, about his part and hers. "You are not the cage. You are the anchor," she said, her voice trembling with passion. "Your incredible will is what must hold the threads of shadow steady. I am not the candle. I am the thread. My gentleness is the only thing that can weave them without breaking. We are not the victims, Vorlag. We are the cure." He stared at her, his expression unreadable. He searched her eyes, looking for any hint of doubt, of false hope. But he found none. All he saw was a blazing, unwavering certainty. Still, he pulled his hands away. "We tried," he whispered, his voice cracking. "We touched, and it almost destroyed us both. It hurt you." "Because we didn't know what we were doing," she pleaded. "We just smashed our powers together. Now we know. We have to try again. The right way." The silence stretched. He was a king who had lost his kingdom, a wolf who had lost his spirit. Trusting her now, after their catastrophic failure, was a greater leap of faith than anything he had ever done. She saw the war in his eyes, the tired warrior who wanted to surrender versus the king who could not. Slowly, deliberately, he reached out and cupped her face, his thumb gently brushing away the tear track on her cheek. The touch was hesitant, but it was real. And in it, he made his choice. "The scourge is too strong here," he said, his voice regaining a sliver of its former command. "It knows this castle. We cannot do it here." "The vision," she breathed, her heart soaring. "It showed me. Two hearts. One here, deep below the castle, and one in my home, beneath the roots of the great willow in the glade." He stood up, pulling her to her feet with him. For the first time, they stood together not as captor and prisoner, but as partners. A king of shadow and a healer of light. Two halves of a whole, finally ready to be joined. He looked out the high window towards the blighted, hopeless world, but his eyes were no longer filled with despair, they were filled with resolve. "Then we will face this thing together," he said, his voice a low, steady rumble that vibrated through her soul. "And we will either heal this world or be consumed by it." Chapter 15. The throne room was a tomb, and they were finally walking out of it. Hope was a fire in Elara's chest, a desperate, wild thing that burned away the last of her fear. Vorlag walked beside her, his presence no longer a storm of rage, but a mountain of grim, steady resolve. They were not two separate souls anymore, but two halves of a single defiant purpose. His scarred warrior, the one who had brought her here, waited in the great hall, his golden eyes widening in shock as they approached, not as king and offering, but as equals. "My king?" the warrior Kale rumbled, his hand instinctively going to the hilt of his sword. "Where are you going?" Forlag didn't stop. "To end this. Ready the horses." "But the blight? It's accelerating. The scouts report shadows moving in the lower pass. To leave the fortress now is suicide," Kyle protested, his loyalty warring with his disbelief. "To stay is to die slowly," Forlag countered, his voice a low growl that held no room for argument. He stopped and turned, his gaze locking with his warriors. "Kale, for centuries we have fought a war of attrition. We have held the line. But we were only ever treating the symptom, not the disease." He glanced at Alara, a universe of meaning passing between them in a single look. "Now, we go to the source. We go to the heart of the wound." Alara stepped forward, her voice quiet but firm. "He's right. We can't win by hiding in the dark. We have to bring the light to it." Kale stared at her, then back at his king. He saw the shift, the unbreakable bond that now existed between them. Deep down, he knew the truth. His king had changed. He wasn't just a warden of a dying land anymore. He was something more. With a slow, reluctant nod, he finally bowed his head. "As you command, my king." Moments later, they were in the vast, echoing courtyard. Two strong mountain horses, their coats as dark as the surrounding stone, snorted plumes of white mist into the frigid air. There was no grand procession, no army, just the two of them, a king of shadow and a healer of light. As Vorlag swung himself into the saddle with a warrior's practiced ease, he reached a hand down to her. "This will not be an easy journey, Alara." "I know," she said, taking his hand without hesitation. His grip was strong, warm, and real. He pulled her up, settling her in front of him. Her back was pressed against the solid wall of his chest, and his scent, pine and winter frost and that ancient, wild power, surrounded her. As fire bloomed beneath her skin, she felt a jolt of something that had nothing to do with magic, and everything to do with the man holding her. Because of that, she leaned back, drawing strength from his presence. The great gates groaned open, a final, mournful sound. Without another word, they rode out of the fortress of Umbracrag, leaving the tomb of 1,000 years behind them. Before them lay a dead kingdom, a hostile land, and an enemy that was now fully aware of their intent. The journey ahead was a suicide mission, and it was their only hope. Chapter 16. The Deadlands of Umbracrag were even more terrifying on the move. They rode in silence, the rhythmic clop of the horses' hooves the only sound in a world devoid of life. Petrified trees clawed at the bruised sky like skeletal fingers. The very air was thin and sharp, tasting of dust and decay. With every step the horses took, Alara could feel the scourge pressing in on them, a conscious, hateful presence that slithered in the shadows just beyond their sight. That night, they took shelter in the lee of a massive, wind-carved rock formation. The cold was a physical entity, a predator that gnawed at their bones. "We need a fire," Alara whispered, her teeth chattering. Vorlag slid off the horse, his movements stiff. "A fire will draw them." "Draw what?" Before he could answer, a low, chittering sound echoed from the rocks above them. Her heart skipped. It was a sound that didn't belong to any natural creature. It was the sound of nightmares. Vorlag's head snapped up, his golden eyes instantly alert, scanning the darkness. "Blight crawlers," he growled, pulling the heavy sword from his back. The steel whispered as it left the scabbard. "Twisted things. What's left of the mountain wolves after the scourge gets its claws in them?" As if summoned, they appeared. Three of them. They were mockeries of wolves, gaunt, skeletal creatures with patchy black fur and too many limbs that scuttled and scraped on the rocks. Their eyes glowed with the same sickly purple light as the fungi, and a thick black drool dripped from their elongated jaws. Without warning, one of them launched itself from the rocks, a blur of shadow and claws. Boom! Vorlag met it head-on, his sword a blur of silver in the gloom. He moved with a brutal, terrifying grace, a warrior in his element. He was not the broken man from the throne room. He was a king defending his own. But then, the other two crawlers flanked him, their movements unnatural and fast. Her body moved on instinct. Ilara slid from the horse, her mind racing. She had no weapon. Her healing was useless against these abominations. But then, her eyes landed on her small leather pouch of herbs, the wolfsbane. It wouldn't kill them, but it was a poison to their kind. As Vorlag parried a snapping jaw, another crawler lunged for his exposed side. "Vorlag!" she screamed. Without thinking, she ripped the pouch open and threw the dried sprig of wolfsbane directly into the creature's face. The effect was instantaneous. The blight crawler shrieked, a high, unearthly sound of pain, and recoiled, clawing at its own face. That single moment of distraction was all Vorlag needed. He spun, his blade singing through the air, and severed the creature's head in a single, clean strike. The remaining crawler, seeing its packmates fall, hesitated for a split second. A fatal mistake. Vorlag lunged, his sword finding its heart. The silence that followed was deafening, broken only by their ragged breaths. "You saved me," Vorlag breathed, turning to her. His chest was heaving, his face streaked with black ichor, but his eyes were filled with a raw, stunned admiration. Her thoughts spun. I just, he closed the distance between them in two long strides. "You are more than a healer, Ilara," he murmured, his voice a low, rough rumble. He reached up, his hand surprisingly gentle as he brushed a stray strand of hair from her face. His thumb grazed her cheek and the space between them burned. "You are a warrior." Her breath caught. Under the weight of his stare, the world seemed to fall away. There was only the cold, the darkness, and the impossible, undeniable connection that pulsed between them. He leaned in closer, his golden eyes searching hers, and for a heart-stopping moment, she thought he was going to kiss her. The moment their eyes locked, the tension broke, but not with a kiss. A low groan of pain ripped from his lips. He staggered back, clutching his arm. "Vorlag!" She rushed to his side. A deep gash left by the crawler's claws bled sluggishly on his forearm. But the blood wasn't red. It was a dark, viscous black. "The claws. They're poisoned with the blight," he gritted out, his face pale. To make things worse, she felt the scourge in the wound, a cold, corrupting presence trying to invade him, to use the opening to poison him from within. "Sit," she commanded, her healer's instincts taking over. He sank to the ground, leaning against the rock, his breathing already becoming labored. She knelt beside him, placing her hands over the wound. She didn't try to force her light. Instead, she remembered the vision. She closed her eyes, reached for his pain, and began to weave. She didn't fight the shadow in the wound. She found it, isolated it with threads of her own gentle magic, and carefully, painstakingly, began to draw it out. It was agony for them both. He grunted in pain, his body trembling, but he held perfectly still, trusting her completely. She felt the blight resist, a cold, spiteful thing fighting her every step of the way. But her gentleness was not weakness. It was a scalpel, precise and unyielding. Eventually, the last of the black poison was drawn from the wound. As the silence roared, fresh, clean red blood began to well up in its place. He let out a long, shuddering breath. "Thank you," he whispered, his voice hoarse with exhaustion and something more. Something raw and vulnerable. She looked up and met his gaze. The king was gone. The warrior was gone. There was only Vorlag. And he was looking at her as if she were the first sunrise after 1,000 years of night. In the quiet that followed, he didn't pull away. and she didn't either. The battle was over, but a new, far more dangerous one was just beginning in the space between their hearts. Chapter 17. After days of riding through a world of gray and black, the first hint of green was a physical shock. They crested a ridge, and below them lay the sunken glade. Or what was left of it? Her breath caught on a sob. It was so much worse. The vibrant green she remembered was now a sickly, mottled brown. The great willow at its center looked gaunt, its leaves limp and colorless. The fading had accelerated into a gallop. Elara, Forlog's voice was a low rumble of concern beside her. "This is my fault," she whispered, the words a raw ache in her throat. "Our connection. It didn't just provoke the scourge in your lands. It provoked it here, too. Maybe it was fate that they arrived when they did." Her people were gathered in the center of the village, their faces thin and etched with fear. They were staring at the great willow. Elder Kian stood with them, his kind face a mask of despair. But it was Maeve who stood apart, her ancient eyes fixed on the dying tree, her expression grim as stone. Then she turned, as if she had felt their presence on the wind. Her dark eyes widened, first in shock, then in disbelief, and finally, in a cold, rising fury as she saw who rode beside Elara. Without another word, Elara urged her horse forward, down into the dying valley of her birth, her home. The whispers started as soon as they entered the village. Fear, accusation, awe. Her packmates stared at Vorlog as if he were death itself, a monster from the darkest tales brought to life. They shrank away as he dismounted, his sheer size and power an intimidating presence in their quiet, fading world. Elara. It was Kian. He rushed forward, his face a mess of relief and confusion. "Child, you are alive. We thought..." He stopped, his gaze falling on Vorlog, and the relief in his eyes was replaced by a deep, instinctual fear. "He is not our enemy, Kian," Elara said, her voice ringing with a strength she didn't know she possessed. "Not our enemy?" A voice, sharp as obsidian, cut through the air. Maeve stalked towards them, her eyes blazing. "You bring the beast who cursed us to our doorstep and you say he is not our enemy? Have you lost your mind, girl?" "The beast who cursed you?" Vorlog's voice was a low growl, and the pack flinched as one. "My kingdom has suffered under this blight for 1,000 years. Do not speak to me of curses, old one." "I speak the truth," Maeve shot back, unafraid. "The treaty was clear. A daughter of the healer's blood to appease the Alpha King and stay his wrath." "The treaty was a lie," Elara cried out, stepping between them. The air crackled with tension. "Or a misunderstanding. Maeve, Kian, everyone, listen to me. Vorlog didn't curse us. His people didn't curse us. We were both cursed by the same enemy a long, long time ago." Her words hung in the air, a shocking, impossible revelation. The pack murmured amongst themselves, their faces a sea of confusion. In that moment, she explained everything. The sundering scourge. The two halves of the curse. The archives. The vision. She told them how their two powers were not opposites, but complements. How Vorlog was the anchor, and she was the weaver. And how their only hope, their world's only hope, was to stand here, under their sacred willow, and join their powers to heal the original wound. When she finished, the silence was absolute. She didn't know what scared her more. Maeve's cold, disbelieving stare, or the flicker of desperate hope she saw dawning in Kian's eyes. "You would have us trust our lives, the lives of our children, to a mad theory and a monster?" Maeve sneered. "I would have you trust me," Elara countered, her gaze unwavering. She looked past Maeve, at the faces of her people, at Finn, the small boy, who watched with wide, curious eyes. "I am a healer. My life, my gift, has been about mending what is broken. This is just the greatest wound of all." The space between them burned. Her entire life, She had been quiet, obedient. Now she was challenging the authority of the eldest, the wisdom of their ancestors, which meant she was giving them a choice: die slowly in the fading light, or risk everything on one impossible, brilliant spark of hope. Chapter 18. She is one of us. The voice that cut through the tense silence was Kian's. He stepped forward, placing a hand on Alara's shoulder, his kind eyes now blazing with a conviction that mirrored her own. For generations, we have accepted our fate. We have watched our world fade and called it the will of the ancestors. But what if it was never their will? What if it was a wound that is finally ready to be healed? He turned to face Maeve, his voice rising, filled with a passion she had never heard from him before. Look at our children, Maeve. Look at this land. The old ways are failing us. Alara offers us a new way, a chance. Are we so afraid that we would rather die in the twilight than fight for the dawn? A murmur of agreement rippled through the crowd. Hope, so long starved, was a dangerous and powerful thing. But Maeve was not moved. It is a trick, she hissed, her dark eyes fixed on Vorlag. He is a king of shadow. He will consume her light and with it, what little life we have left. He will drain this glade dry and leave us with nothing but dust and bones. Before Alara could speak, Vorlag stepped forward. He did not look at Maeve. Instead, he looked at the gathered pack, his golden eyes sweeping over their thin, frightened faces. He was an alpha king, a being of immense power, yet he did not project dominance. He projected a deep, weary sorrow. She is right, he said, his voice a low, gravelly rumble that vibrated in their bones. I am a king of shadow, and for a century I have watched that shadow consume everything I have ever loved. I have fought it. I have held it back with nothing but my own will. I have been a cage for a dying beast. His gaze settled on Alara, and the raw vulnerability in that look was more powerful than any sword. But she, this healer, has shown me the truth. My will is not meant to be a cage. It is meant to be an anchor. For her. For the light. He held out his hands, palms up, a gesture of utter submission. I am not asking for your trust. I know I have not earned it. I am asking you to trust her. She is your daughter, your healer. She is the only one who can do this. The silence that followed was different. It was not the silence of fear, but of consideration. They saw him then, not as a monster, but as a desperate man, placing his entire world, his very soul, in the hands of their healer. Just like that, everything changed. Maeve looked from Vorlag's open hands to Alara's determined face, and for the first time, the iron certainty in her own eyes wavered. She saw the truth in their bond, the impossible hope they represented. Her shoulders, for the first time in a century, slumped. The ancestors have been silent for a very long time, Maeve whispered, her voice barely audible. Perhaps it is time we listen to a new song. It was not an endorsement, but it was a concession. It was enough. Alara and Vorlag turned as one, their eyes meeting in a silent promise. The time for words was over. They walked together, side by side, through the parting crowd of werewolves. Her people watched, their faces a mixture of terror and fragile hope, as the two of them came to a stop at the base of the great dying willow. This was it, the heart of her world, the altar for their final desperate prayer. Alara placed her hand on the trunk of the ancient tree. The bark felt cold and brittle, the life within it a faint, thready pulse. She closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and reached for the quiet silver river of her own magic. Then Vorlag placed his hand over hers. She felt the mountain of his will, the deep, chaotic storm of his shadow. But this time, she wasn't afraid. Beneath the dying leaves of the sacred willow, with the eyes of two worlds upon them, they prepared to face their enemy. They would either heal the world, or be torn apart by the storm they were about to unleash. The sundering scourge was waiting, and so were they.